Before we begin, Les, would you mind leading us in prayer?
Dear Lord, we're so grateful once again to be able to gather as your children and saints and to study your word and thank you for preparation of the good lessons that we have and appreciate the richness of your word that continues to mold us and make us into your likeness. And I pray that you would be with us each, help us to grow and become more like Jesus. In his name we pray.
Amen. Looks like we're all home folk, as we often say, and I think we might be missing some folks as well, but it's good to be here finally and to see everyone. As you all know, we're studying the book of Ephesians, and we're in chapter 6, and we've been studying about the relationships that we have in this life, and it all began in chapter 5 and verse 21, I believe. Where Paul says, be subject to one another in the fear of Christ. And then he extends that to husbands and wives, children and parents, and masters and slaves. And we had been discussing the husband and wife relationship for about a few classes. And last week, we began talking about the parent-child relationship as discussed in Ephesians 6, verses 1 through 4, and let's go ahead and read those verses. Now, I've got those on the screen. That's not where that's supposed to be, so something didn't update right. This is right. Okay. I think I messed up on my PowerPoint. I hope that was the only spot it was. But let's go ahead and read these verses. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. For this is right, honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. And fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And we were focusing our attention on those first three verses, which really is the child's responsibility to obey and honor their parents. And we ended up class looking at the end result of what happens when that is not enforced in the home. And this was from Sunday morning's paper that 14 hours in Chicago, 25 people shot, including a three-year-old boy. And I heard something on the news, so I verified it. And this is this morning's paper for Chicago. 74 people shot, 12 fatally in Chicago over the weekend. And it's just horrendous. And that is the result of a lack of respect and for authority being taught in the home. And it all starts in the home, doesn't it? That's where it starts. And if there is a failure for that to take place, this is where we end up, unfortunately. And we're seeing it throughout, not just in Chicago, all over society. We see these protests where people are becoming violent and doing all of these things with no respect whatsoever for property or for authority or for anything like that. And that's because there's a failure. And the failure is in that family unit, that is not being taught. And it ends in complete anarchy, and we're seeing it everywhere. And as we discussed in class Sunday morning, I think this helps us to understand why God had commanded such severe punishment for a rebellious and a stubborn child. A child that absolutely refused to listen to his parents was to be stoned, because he knew what the result of letting something like that go would be. And we see the evidence of it. And it just emphasizes that God knows what he's doing, doesn't it? And that what we need to do is listen to what he says. So it's the child's responsibility to obey and honor their parents, but where does that really begin?
With the parent.
With the parent. These children are growing up, I imagine, in Chicago, primarily without fathers in their homes. And, you know, with maybe even absentee mothers. I don't know. So there is no parent to instill that. Of course, it starts with the parent understanding and knowing God's will, but it starts with the parents' responsibility, and that's what we're going to look at this evening. And I know this is not something we want to think about, but it's the reality of what happens when we don't follow God's will. And it's sad. It's sad. Verse 4, "And fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." And, you know, compared to the instruction of the children, it's relatively short. But there's a very few words here with a tremendous amount of impact when we think of what's being said here. So let's look at what's being said. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. So Paul is saying that we're not to do anything that ever causes our children to be angry or displeased with us. Is that what Paul's saying here? No. If that's how you raise your child, what are you going to end up with? Yeah, you're going to end up with this. Anyone know who that is? Anyone ever seen that movie? Willy Wonka and that's Veruca Salt from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. "Daddy, I want a golden goose now. I want an Oompa Loompa now." And what did the father do? He said, "Okay, I'm going to, you know, don't get upset now, Veruca. We'll get that for you." And you end up with a spoiled brat. So that's not what Paul is saying. By the way, that's one of my favorite movies. So, you know.
So you've watched that too many times.
Oh, yeah, I can sing the song and everything. All of them. I loved it as a kid. It's got a good moral at the end of it, that good character and integrity is rewarded. And really, isn't that what we want to focus on? So I love the moral of that movie. But we don't want our kids turning out like Veruca Salt, who is a character, but there are real Veruca Salts in the world today. You know, if we're never doing anything that upsets our children, we're obviously not parenting them. And I think sometimes, and I know sometimes, that parents make the mistake of wanting to be their child's friend. They want to be friends with their children, and they don't want to do anything to offend them or upset them. That's not the parents' responsibility. Parents are to guide and instruct and watch for the souls of their children. And we'll talk about that as we go on this morning. As the relationship matures into adulthood, then I think that's certainly appropriate. And of course, you want a good relationship with your child. But just trying to avoid them from becoming upset or angry is not the answer, and we all know that. And you know, I'm not the most experienced at this because Hannah never gets like that hardly. You know, I have a child that is so compliant, it's ridiculous. I tell people, and you've heard me say this, that God had mercy on us because we were old. And Hannah is just so easy in that way. Not that she doesn't pout or things like that, but she just, you know, we never do, you know, she's just not difficult at all. And I'm thankful for that, but you know, doesn't give me some of the experience that some of you I know have and have had to deal with over the years. Well, what does it mean to provoke your child to anger? We'll talk about that before we talk about some other aspects of this. What does that mean to provoke your child to anger? Okay, and that's, so to expect unreasonable expectations. I like the verse in Colossians. I think that goes hand in hand with this. Fathers, do not exasperate your children that they may not lose heart. And I think, Ray, if we have demands upon them or expectations that are just completely unreasonable, or if we discipline them out of anger, you know, that's a way to provoke your child. I thought of a few here. Being overly demanding. I think that's, you know, we see parents like that. Being overly critical, where your child can't do anything right. Being unfair, which is completely different than being accused of being unfair, by the way. You know, I think most children accuse their parents of being unfair throughout their lifetimes. But you need to make sure you are being fair with your children. Any other things you want to add to that or elaborate on any of these things? Les?
They usually say that in fire because they've been refused to do something that the parents think
Exactly, yeah. That's not fair because that's what I want to do. That's, you know, and what's the parents' usual response? Life isn't fair. Which is true. If, you know, if you're catering to your child to try to make everything fair, you're not preparing them for life. Because they're going to find out that life is not fair, less. I find, you know, you have, when you see your child doing something they shouldn't be doing, you need to let them know that. But you also need to reinforce good behavior. And I think you're right. You need to you know, and I think sometimes parents are looking for that slip up, for that mistake. So, you know, but are they looking for that good behavior, that thing that they can compliment or reward or encourage? And I think that's a very, very good point. Joe?
You know, it's sometimes not difficult for us as adults to become discouraged about things. Well, with children, it's the same way. And just like we all need to have be complimented and encouraged on things, children have to have that too. And if they're not encouraged in the relationship, then it doesn't take much to provoke them to anger.
No.
You know, so there's a lot of encouragement that has to take place so that you're able to discipline without it being a negative. Discipline does not have to be a negative all the time.
Oh, ultimately, it should be for a positive purpose. Neil?
The concept of something being fair requires that there be a judge to determine what's fair. And that's where we have to focus. Our judge is not.
And we'll talk about kind of that. Well, I don't want to say anything right. We'll get to a point I want to make in a minute. So, any other comments before? I've got a couple other things I wanted to say here. You know, so fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. And as I was thinking about this, is it okay to provoke anyone to anger? How many people responded to Jesus in anger? Yeah, the Pharisees did all the time. But I don't believe his intent was to provoke them to anger. His intent was he was going to speak the truth, regardless of how they felt about it. And that's the same thing we have to do with our children. That you know, it doesn't matter if it upsets them. If this is the right thing to do, they need to do it. And I think, you know, but I think if your intent is to provoke to anger, or if you know that what you're going to do is going to provoke them when you could have done it differently, I think then, you know, and I think that's the point. But the thing is, you know, we can influence people to do things they shouldn't do, or at least we can try to, you know, if somebody, but and we shouldn't do that. That's tempting. That, to me, that's tempting people to sin, in a sense, or something like that. We don't want to do that with our children. We don't want to do that with anybody. But you know, I don't think Jesus ever intentionally provoked anyone to anger. Now, he might have known what the response was going to be to something he said or did. But I don't, you know, it says the Lord does not tempt anyone to do evil in the book of James. So but I understand your point, Les. Yeah. Linda.
Give the child, you know, and the more they let them do what they want to do, the more they're going to love the parents, and
I think children want boundaries. I think they seek boundaries. They want to know, where the line is. And they want to test that line. I guarantee it. You know, I don't have that problem with Hannah too much, but they want to know. They want to see, you know, is that an electric fence there? I want to find, with the parents. So we all want boundaries, don't we, though? I mean, we want red lights when we're driving down the road. Why? Because they keep us safe. We know that there's safety in that bound. We want a guardrail.
We've got plenty of boundaries.
Exactly. And God gives them to us for a very reason. But we want those. And I think children innately want those. And when they don't have them, they act out trying to find them. And when parents don't enforce them, what do the children do? They continue to act out. They become out of control. It's just a downward spiral from that point. I'm not a psychologist, but I've read this, I've heard this, and I've seen it. We see it. And then when children are acting out, they want someone to put their foot down and say, this is, and I think Linda's right. Sometimes they don't want to necessarily do something, but they're wanting some direction. You know, they want some guidelines. But, the thing is, before I get to that, I was going to, it says here, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. So you leave that to the mother, right, fathers? You say, it's your turn. That's your responsibility. You submit to me, and then you provoke your kids to wrath. Is that the point Paul's making here? Is it okay for a mother to provoke their child to wrath? No. So why does Paul single out fathers here, do you think? I've got a couple thoughts, but had you thought about that? I think that's right. I mean, he is ultimately responsible for the manner in which the children are disciplined, the manner in which the rules are enforced and things such as. And I don't know about you, but I remember when I was a little boy, and I did something really bad, which wasn't that infrequently. You know what my mother would tell me? Hey, you had the same mom. Wait till your father gets home. Because I remember hiding in a toy box when I was 4 years old, because I was scared of my dad. I don't mean, and you know, I didn't. I had a reverence, a respect for my father. I knew I was going to catch it. I don't remember what happened. I just remember hiding in the toy box, but it was so horrible I blotted it out of my mind forever, I guess. But no, it wasn't. That wasn't the case at all. But wait till your father gets home. The father is really, I think, the enforcer. And he's the one that, and I think fathers tend to, mothers tend to be much more loving, I think, and for the most part, generally speaking, and compassionate. That's just the way women are. Fathers tend to be a little bit more like taskmasters and masters and perfectionists and want everything just right. And I my dad used to play tennis with my dad, and I still suffer from that. I didn't hit that right, or I didn't do that, and it's still in my head. My dad's a constant correction, and it's not a good thing in that way. So we have to be careful about as I think Ray was saying, unreasonable demands, things such as that. Above all else, what do our children need to know from us? That we love them and that we care for them. And ideally, I think that's the key to discipline. There's a couple quotes, and I don't know who said these quotes, and they've been around for a while, and you've probably heard at least one of these, but the responsibility of the parent is to break their child's will, but not their spirit. So if you have a stubborn child, that it wants to get his way all the time, you've got to break that will and let them know, this is the line, I'm in charge. But you don't break their spirit. You don't take, I think provoke them to anger in that sense, or have them feel so frustrated or lose their esteem as a result of that. You don't belittle them, I think is one of the things. Here's another quote, and I thought this was, I'd never heard this one before, but I just found it as I was doing some searching. Discipline balanced with love always equals respect, but discipline without love always equals rebellion. And that seems true to me, that if your child knows you love them and knows you want what's in their best interest, then the discipline, they can handle the discipline and know you love. And it's, you know, like I said, Hannah doesn't need much discipline. You just say something to Hannah and that's pretty much it. But, you know, I know children who have to spank their parents, which I think is perfectly appropriate at times. Maybe the only thing that works with some children. What do you always do after you discipline? You let them know you love them. And it's not, you know, you're not, they aren't the one who is bad. The behavior is what's bad. And that's what you want to do. And like I said, I'm not a psychologist, and I don't have the most experienced parenting of anybody here in this room. But that's such an important thing for our children to understand, that we love them. And we're disciplining them because of that. And that's why God disciplines us, isn't it? Because he loves us. And that's how we can deal with it as Christians, isn't it? Knowing that you know, we are to count it all joy when we fall into diverse temptations. Knowing that it's, you know, the trying of our faith produces patience. It's in our own best interest. And that's what we have to realize too. And But I think another point we should recognize, that what our children need to see in our behavior toward them is not only our love for them, but God's love for them. That we, you know, and psychologists have said that most people's view of God first and foremost comes from what? Their relationship with their father and how their father treated them. That's a pretty big responsibility on our shoulders, isn't it? Those of us who are fathers, that's, you know, that we're giving them an impression of what the authority of God is. And if we're unloving toward them, if we discipline them out of anger, then that's how they're going to see God later in their life. And that may be something that's very hard to turn around to what it should be. Do you have a comment, Joe? Or? I'm sure it was good. Yeah. So, Les.
I had a call about raising a child in the Holy Spirit. I've learned after raising three that each child is different. And the thing that you, direction that you push one child in the different, or the way that you discipline them in the different. And I think that verse of Proverbs that says, try to child in the way that you should know where it is, holding on and part of it, really relates to learning who that child is. You know, from a character standpoint, personality standpoint. Because once you are able to ascertain who they are, who God made them, then you can better begin to focus whatever that energy is into a pathway.
Yeah, and I know children just respond differently to different types of discipline. You know, Hannah's thing is, you know, you can't get to watch one of your shows if and you know, and that's just, you know, she doesn't like it. And you know, as a parent, even that's so minor, but you know, that's something she enjoys so much. I as a parent, I feel bad to take that from her. And that's part of being a parent, though, isn't it? You don't do it because it makes you feel good. You do it because you know it's what they need. And what's in their best interest, Joe?
And discipline so often comes across with a negative connotation, and that's so unfortunate, because that's not really the idea. It's not supposed to be negative. New King James says in the training and admonition of the Lord,
let's go ahead and go to that next section.
A little bit more of a focus, maybe, of what the purpose of the discipline is. Well, if you're trying to train someone, maybe that has a more positive kind of influence there. And maybe even you see the love in that too, you know, in our vernacular today.
Yeah, discipline today. But of course, you know, people who, you know, who want to be very good at sports discipline their bodies. People who want to be good musicians are very disciplined about practice. So we understand that and that positive aspect of it. But I think you're right. Today, discipline is like, oh, that's mean. You know, that's the same as but punishment. It can be positive as well, Marilyn.
The elephant is, I think, is
and admonition. And I think that's definitely a much more comfortable translation. I actually did a little bit of looking into this. You know, obviously, discipline and instruction, nurture and admonition. Which words did you use?
Training and admonition.
Those are, you know, these are the same words translated differently. But my understanding is that the instruction part, the latter one, is primarily verbal communication. That the instruction part, the admonition part, is verbal. That we are to train them verbally, give them verbal instructions about things, and that the discipline, the nurturing, is more of a correctional type of thing. You know, if you have something, you know, in nurturing, if you have a wound or something and you nurture it or something like that, you're trying to make it better, aren't you? You're trying to heal it or something like that. And that's kind of the idea, the discipline idea, that, you know, punishment is intended to better the person. It's a deterrent. Say, this is, you know, you're getting this because we don't want you doing that. And sometimes that's all young children can understand, isn't it? That you can't reason with them so many times. You've got to take something valuable away from them or show them, you know, this is, you know, if this is going to be the result, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. Pavlov's dog sort of thing, you know, and kids understand that, and that's what they need. And the Lord understands that that's what they need early on in their lives. But what are children to be instructed in? The discipline and instruction or nurture and admonition of the Lord. They're to be instructed primarily in God's will, with His Spirit, with His purposes in mind.
I think this helps to define the first part of what we're talking about. You know, do not provoke your children to anger. What does this mean? Stuff like that. Well, that would be exactly opposite of trying to instruct in the Lord. You know, we struggle with, what do you mean, you know, provoke? Are you trying to correct? Might that provoke him? Well, it might, but I think provoking here is more of like picking on it, being unreasonable with it.
Being demeaning or yes. Condescending or things such as that.
The second half of the verse helps us to clarify that. You know, that our attitude should be that of giving instruction and training in the Lord.
And I was thinking about this, you know, it occurs to me that, you know, there's a mold we're supposed to try to get our children to be fitting into. And that mold is God's. He said, here's the shape, the mold I want your children to fit. And this is how you achieve that. You know, and it's by nurture and admonition. It's by a loving attitude. And it's by with His will and His purposes in mind. And that needs to be our focus always. And what absolutely, and you, I don't know if you're going to read my mind on this, but what is our most important means of instructing our children? Our example. I think that is absolutely the most important means we have of instructing our children. You know, children, they can recognize hypocrisy from a mile away, can't they? They know what hypocrisy is. They know if you're being true to what you claim to be. But sincerity, if they see sincerity and integrity, that's going to last a lifetime. In their hearts and in their mind. Brent Hunter, and I think I've used this illustration before, and when he was 16 years old, and some of you know who Brent Hunter is, well-known preacher, and has produced some very good work on personal evangelism and some other things, but Brent, when he was 16 years old, he was struggling with his faith. And he just, you know, he just said, he didn't know if all this was true or not, and just kind of wrestling with it, which I think is kind of a natural response to children who are brought up in Christian homes. And he said he got up in the middle of the night one night, and it's like 2 or 3 in the morning, and his father's study door was just slightly open, and he heard some mumbling. And he said he walked up and he kind of peeked in, and his dad was on his knees praying at 2 or 3 in the morning. And Brent just thought, he really believes this. He really believes this. And he said it impacted him for the rest of his life. That you know, that this was, his dad wasn't playing at this Christianity thing. It was something he sincerely believed. My grandmother was a tremendous influence in my life, my paternal grandmother. She was not a perfect woman. I mean, she struggled, you know, she had a very hard life. Her husband left her. He was a gambler and a drunkard and would disappear for years and show up for a month or two and disappear again. Not that she would necessarily, you know, continue that marriage relationship. She never divorced him, though. And squandered so much money, squandered my dad's money when he was just a teenager and stuff, when working and things like that. And she had diabetes, where she had to take insulin shots every day. And she was a smoker. And she struggled. She finally quit smoking later in life. But she was great. And that was something she struggled with. But I never once doubted her sincerity. As much difficulty, as much as she struggled with things, I never doubted her faith or her sincerity. And she always tried to talk to me about the Bible. And when I started paying attention, you know, to things and seeking, you know, spiritually seeking truth, she's the first person I called, because I knew that she was genuine. That's what our children need to see in us above everything else, that our faith is genuine. Not that we don't make mistakes. We all make mistakes. We all struggle with sin. We all have difficulties. But they need to see the genuineness of our faith. And how many times have we heard, you know, children or adults raised in Christian homes who have stopped attending services say, I don't go to church and there's too many hypocrites there. You know, and I think many times it's probably because that's what they saw at home. That they saw hypocrisy in the home and they just assumed everybody else was the same way that it was in their home. But, you know, they need to see our example of what it means to be genuine. You know, why wouldn't that sort of thing turn somebody off? If you know, your parents went to church every Sunday and then they were a completely different person when you got home. So, but Paul tells us here, discipline, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. You know, Star Trek, if you ever were a Star Trek person, had a prime directive. Anyone know what this prime directive in Star Trek was? That they wouldn't interfere with these alien lands, the planets they went to. I mean, that's all science fiction, okay? But that was their prime directive. You know, this is our prime directive as fathers and mothers and parents, to bring our children up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. That, you know, and it's the father's primary responsibility. Seems to me he is responsible for the souls of his children. It's not to make sure they're the best soccer player or football player or tennis player, or to make sure they're the valedictorian of their class and get accepted into the best colleges. It's not to make sure their lives are filled with endless fun activities. How many parents you know that just run around from one place to the other? I mean, there's nothing wrong with our children being involved in extracurricular activities. But if they see that as the primary directive of their parent, then they're seeing the wrong thing. It's not to provide them with the best clothes, the biggest house, the nicest car, the nicest toys in the neighborhood. It's to bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And as I was thinking about this, I thought about what we're told in 1 John. And I think about this passage a lot, because I need to think about this passage a lot because of the world we live in. Do not love the world, nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life, is not from the Father, but is from the world. And the world is passing away, and also its lust. But the one who does the will of God abides forever. Is this truly what we're conveying to our children? That we believe this, and this is what we want them to know? Or is it all these other things we've been talking about. And we, you know, we may need to make some improvements in our lives about that. We are to bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. Well, we've got about 4 or 5 minutes. Before we get into slaves and masters, that'll be a good place to start on Sunday morning. Anybody want to contribute any other thoughts to what we've been discussing? Les?
There's a pattern that I'll remind you of that's on the thing that you said, that is worrisome these days, and that is that parents have become such bad parents that very often the grandparents are raising the children. And I know it,
I see it all the time.
Oh, I see it. I can name many. I know of a case that I heard recently, it was one of my neighbors. The child has a room full of toys. It's like not a toy box, but a toy room. And the parents or grandparents of this child, the child was a family for us, a truck. Drug that was involved somewhere, it was close to $300 for a toy. And he just wore them down long enough where they bought this truck for him and added it to this, you know, huge room full of toys. And it's just it is a recipe for never being satisfied with possessions, because if you start the child off buying everything he wants, then that's why we have such an entitlement mentality among many young people, maybe a whole generation, who thinks that they're entitled to things, that you don't have to work for it, you don't have to earn it. Maybe it's a little bit off the subject, but I think it comes back to loving the things in the world. You know?
And it taints them.
It
takes away appreciation, I think, too,
yes,
as well.
And it tells them that your happiness comes from possessing things. And that is what your aim is, to possess more things. But the problem with that is, of course, that they're never satisfied with silver. You know, he didn't love silver and never satisfied with it. He didn't love gold and never satisfied with it.
Well, the eye is never satisfied with seeing, or and you know, we live in such a wealthy society, in a materialistic society. I sit there, we watch the news at night or watch a program, and I think of the commercials. We are just inundated when you watch television every 10 minutes. Buy this. You want this. This is better. This is going to make you look better. This is going to make you happy. I mean, that's all we see on the television. I think Brent Duncan said when they got a television, his father said, "That's the devil's eye." I think he's right to some extent. But yeah, and then you deserve it. Yeah, you know, you deserve McDonald's. You deserve all. You know, and you know, you're talking about being tainted. You know, I was, you know, I like to eat at certain restaurants, and you know, we like to eat at some Sonny's Barbecue that's all down south or something like that. I don't want her to put a Sonny's Barbecue here. You know why? Because I'd get tired of it. It wouldn't be special any longer. And that's, you know, because every time that happens, I don't want that anymore. I've had enough of that. And I like it to be, and that's, I think you've hit the point, Les. When you keep trying to fulfill your child's life with things, there's no appreciation, period. For that. It's just, you know, oh, that's, I deserve that. That's just part of it. So, thank you for your comments, as always, and your kind attention. And we'll look at masters and slaves on Sunday morning, and might spend the entire class doing that. I need to try to keep preaching until Joe gets back from Africa, so I'm not sure. Or someone's going to have to start filling in. I think I'm trying to plan that out, but I don't want to move slow intentionally, but I think we've had some good things to consider and discuss. Thank you again.